Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien. Did you have a wee happy St. Patty's Day?
I did, laddie, I did. Actually, I didn't really have much fun. I normally have a couple drinks, but we've had illness with the children, and it leads to no fun for the daddy-o.
Oh, that's the worst.
It's put the kibosh on everything.
Oh, man. Well, I fractured my leg.
Doing an Irish jig, have you?
Doing the Irish jig on the black ice the day before, 2 days before St. Patrick's Day. No, 3 days.
Oh, the luck of the Irish just skipped right over you.
Oh, I got no luck in me. But I did drink a lot on St. Patrick's Day because I didn't really get any good medicine from the doctor, so I gave myself medicine. Lots
you
of
know,
liquor.
I just hope they start opening these opium dens out for people because they don't want to give out any drugs to anybody anymore.
It's like, and they're like, let's just take 200 Motrins. And I'm like, yeah, I did that.
That does nothing.
Didn't do anything for me.
Hey, we just reconstructed your whole arm and legs. Take some Motrin.
Hey, that's fine.
Are you fucking insane?
Motrin doesn't do anything for me anymore.
No.
But speaking of broken things.
Breaking
things. We are continuing on with the luck of the Irish and breaking the Prime Directive. We're moving into next gen era because I don't think we have any news this week. I'm back from my Facebook ban, and so I haven't seen much.
So
if there is any news, please forgive me.
Nothing worth mentioning, at least. Yeah, so we are in part three of Prime Directive.
Part three of part one? No.
Maybe. But part three of this riveting series of have these captains or in the crew broken the Prime Directive, and do they uphold it or do they completely ignore it? Last week we talked about Kirk in the TOS series, and Kirk played fast and loose.
But then again, back then, the Prime Directive was also fast and loose.
Yes, that's true. And this is where we're going to really start the rubber hits the road. This is where Gene Roddenberry had time to kind of figure out what he really meant by the Prime Directive. I think it was kind of like an idea lingering in his head when they did the original series, but now he had time to develop it and think it through. So, I mean, I don't know how many years it was, close to 20 years between the original series and the next generation. So he had time to think it out. So we're going to get full force Prime Directive in your face.
Yes.
As
Robbie says, all over your face, neck and chest.
That's right. From Nerdynomicon. All right, so should we jump right into our first episode?
Yeah.
Next Generation?
It's Justice. I loathe and love this episode at the same time. If only this show was on HBO.
Oh, it would be so much better.
It would be so much better.
HBO.
Yeah, because this episode, like, they go down to this planet, right? And I don't know why they go down to this planet. I mean, I know they're going for shore leave, but They break the Prime Directive right away because this is not a Warp 1 spacefaring race at all. Their highest level of technology is the orgy. And maybe their next best technology is like the instant, somewhat painless syringe they have for breaking the rules.
It seemed like they were somewhere in the 20th century, but in a weird kind of Logan's Run kind of way.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure the orgies are the pinnacle of their technology.
That's all they got.
I mean, sure they had buildings, but I mean, like, I couldn't tell they had any technology. I mean, they could build nice little fences around flowers. So I assume they had hammers.
It seemed like they had, I mean, they had some nice buildings, which when we did talk about this episode quite some time ago, we did said this was filmed at a, I think it was
a sewage reclamation plant. Yeah.
Right, right. And they were, they had a space out between, or no, they had to redub their dialogue outside because the planes would fly overhead.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's fun.
It's just I don't think they built any of that. I'm pretty sure the quote unquote Edo God put all their stuff there. I don't think they developed anything.
That was never really specified, but that could be the case for sure. That was never said. That's what happened, but I could see that happening.
Sure, sure. I mean, these are like people who have no greater ambition than to hug and have sex and maybe play pat a cake and massage people in between said things.
It's a great life.
It looked great, and like I said, this would be great for HBO. For syndication in the 80s, they had to play it super tame, although their outfits were pretty crazy.
Yeah, that was even more hilarious, their their outfits. Well, should we talk about here what exactly happened? So if you are unfamiliar with this, obviously this is a very famous Next Generation, where it's a very lovey-dovey planet and seems like everyone's just having sex and just having a good time all around.
Shore Leave planet. I wonder if it was like the inspiration for what Rizo ended up becoming.
It's possible. But what happens is, unfortunately, is poor Wesley Crusher playing ball with some young kids, Edoans, down there on the planet, he goes into a flower bed that was slighted for that you cannot walk into. And this is apparently any rule that they have. If you break any rule, no matter how stupid it is, if they catch you breaking it, you are sentenced to death. And unfortunately, where Wesley Crusher is, where he breaks the rules of going into this flower bed, the police do catch him, do it, and they are about to inject him with this death serum. Apparently, it's painless, but Picard starts saying, like, wait, this can't be right. And he starts trying to negotiate with the Edoans.
Yeah, with the Edo. And the Goshi, I mean, like, he interferes with their supposed, you know, justice system, but they shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Well, and next, what's even worse is Captain Picard then beams up one of their people up to the
one of their women.
One of their women up to the ship, and alien abducts her, and then shows them their god, which is basically this satellite system flying out above it in some trans-dimensional
satellite array. Yeah, because it's not really all the way there, but it's watching enough, and it charges the Enterprise.
Yes, and so that's where Picard decides to get, you know, to send the woman back down to her planet. But so she has seen technically their god. So that's another huge flagrant violation of the Prime Directive that he would even give her that opportunity. So in the end, what we get, Picard's basically speaking to the god in their grand hall or wherever they are, and saying that there's no way we're going to let you kill Wesley Crusher.
And then the transporter doesn't work, but he keeps talking, and then the transporter does work. So apparently he swayed the Edo gods to a point, but...
Or O'Brien just came back from his bathroom break.
Or that, yes, O'Brien.
Oh, shit.
He had a kidney stone. He was suffering.
Captain, I've got to... Captain needs beamed up.
It's like those early Suffering of O'Brien episodes.
That's right. Just when it was a simple kidney stones. So, yeah, interesting, to say the least, because it brings in this moral quandary of, like, you know, that's obviously totally unfair, falling into a flower bed and being sentenced to death, but that's their system, and since they're on their planet, they shouldn't break their rules, and you shouldn't show them their god by bringing them out in space when they're not spacefaring people. So,
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, them showing up and landing on the planet, not pretending to be part of their race, they broke the Prime Directive in the first, you know, before the show even started. When Tasha was like, "Yeah, these people are great. They've got really simple laws," and I didn't read the one law. equals death. Good job doing your job, Tasha. She just saw the hot men and she was like, I could use a good dicking.
Yeah. So this is a definite yes. This is a definite yes and for Picard and for the whole crew.
There's no good explanation for why they're there. As much as Next Gen is trying to like redo the Prime Directive in this way that makes sense, they totally dropped the ball on how they were even allowed to be there in the first place. And so everything that happens subsequently in the episode is a breaking of the Prime Directive.
Right, exactly.
It's like this domino effect.
Right. It's strange, too, because like we were saying before, this is where Gene Roddenberry wanted to basically show off what the Prime Directive was about. Like, he kind of defined it, and then he goes ahead and just kind of, you know, I don't know, it's strange. Like, what was that about? Why did he even try to change all this, you know?
Maybe this episode he was too focused on part B and forgot about part A, because that's the thing. Like, Prime Directive is confusing. It's confusing for us now with all 700 something episodes of Star Trek under our belts, 50 years or, you know, or almost at 51 years, you know, later this year it'll be 51. So I mean, we've got this time under our belt, and it's still confusing. So, I mean, it must have been even more confusing in the middle of it, creating it. As much as we love Gene Roddenberry, he was better at the broad strokes and not so much at the finer details.
Yeah.
He's very much like George Lucas in that respect. If you read some of the things he was into and what he wanted to do, they were kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, I don't know. It's just one of those things that it's a good story for a moral quandary, which Star Trek is great for, but it's not really great for when you look at
it. Internal logic. No.
Yeah, exactly. The next one we have on our list is the episode Data Lore.
I have no idea why this is on the list.
Not really certain either, other than maybe this has something to do with, Android development.
How is that breaking the Prime Directive?
I don't know.
They've already got an Android.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you considered the Androids their own race.
Well, then Offspring should be on here, and it's not, so.
Right. No, absolutely. It's an odd one. This is the Enterprise goes back to Data's home planet. And they find his brother, Lore, and basically find out why Lore was not activated for all that time.
He likes letting big crystal snowflakes kill things. And we don't mean snowflake in the terminology that's been used now. It actually literally looks like a giant snowflake in space.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, it's the crystalline entity. Him and Lore seems to be hanging out. I just love that they teamed up. It's just the greatest
Android idea. And this thing that just likes to eat life.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I just don't know what they have in common.
They don't, but it's just a great idea.
It's a
just
fun pairing.
Yeah, a fun supervillain pairing for.
They should have a spinoff show.
Oh, that would be great. That's a great idea.
Just a solo movie, The Adventures of Lore and the Crystalline Entity.
It'd be great. It'd be so hilarious.
But just like since he's an android, he can live in space. So he just like sits on the crystalline entity, and the crystalline entity zooms around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the only thing I could say is that there's no real Prime Directive violation other than them reassembling Data or Lore, and like I said, that's a hard one to say. I mean, is Data its own life form? I mean, I think we've discussed this quite a bit, especially with Measure of Man.
I mean, Noonien Singh is a human. Mm-hmm. He was born on Earth or an Earth colony. He's descended from someone from Earth, so he's part of someone who's a warp. He's part of a warp one civilization or higher. Mm-hmm. I see no break in the Prime Directive.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm just saying that's the only thing I could possibly say, and it's not really. I don't think this is covered in Prime Directive, but this was for some bizarre reason.
Yeah, I don't know. If any of you guys know why this episode was flagged as Prime Directive, let us know. We'd really love to hear your insights, because I'm drawing a huge blank. I have no idea why this would be considered a Prime Directive break.
Right. The next episode that we have listed is Angel One. Angel One, we talked about this briefly back when we used to do the Riker scores.
Yeah, that's the whole reason we did an episode.
Actually, we didn't even talk about that for that episode. We just threw that
used that as a score
because we just had to talk about
Riker score. It's not a great episode.
No, it's not. It's a fun episode, though, if you want to have some fun for...
if you like Riker's one nipple.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great for that.
Well, and the banter between Troy and Riker and Tasha is pretty good.
Sure.
But yeah, the episode as a whole is not great.
Yeah.
But I don't see where it breaks the Prime Directive, because when I was reading the Memory Alpha for it, it said the Federation has made contact with this place before. So if Prime Directive was broken, right, it was broken long before the episode. So I guess, because, you know, Riker does his speech at the end, which, I mean, it's not, he didn't do anything by force. I mean, they were kind of thinking about trying to beam him out, but they didn't.
Well, the only thing I could say is that that they're trying to, I mean, this episode is heavily skewed towards, like, sexual politics and how things are, how they treat people on their planet. And, you know, maybe by Riker kind of interfering, things got a little messed up. So
sure, but their mission was to go and get these people, and then they find out that there's a web of crap happening with the people and the other indigenous race of Angel One. So I mean, like, because they were trying to, like, maybe do a coup and try to beam them out so they wouldn't be executed, but they didn't end up getting executed. And they just get banished. So, I mean, they didn't really interfere in the politics of the planet unless you consider what Riker was doing with the leader of the planet. If just sleeping with her was breaking the Prime Directive.
Sure.
I don't think so, but maybe?
Yeah. I don't think so either. So
we don't have any of the instances where Kirk was sleeping with different leaders as a breaking the Prime Directive. So
yeah, that's true.
So
those seem to be space-faring races.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Federation had already made contact with this, so the Prime Directive is out the window from the get-go, since they had, if the Prime Directive was broken, it was broken before this episode happened, so there was no actual Prime Directive break in this episode.
Right. For Angel One, it is cited here. It says that this is the first Star Trek episode to have a Prime Directive in its modern incarnation. While it has been mentioned a few times previous in the series, most notably in Justice, the writers have been working on a version from the Star Trek, the original series, which only applied to pre-warp civilization. With this story, Gene Roddenberry rewrote the Prime Directive into a doctrine of total non-interference with the affairs of other species, irrespective of technology level. So this is basically where Roddenberry came and reworked the Prime Directive.
Sure, but like he just made a speech. He made a plea. Like, it was like a court hearing. Like it was organized. He was allowed to be there. If he wasn't allowed to be there, the leader could have told him no.
Right.
So she let him speak in front of the court. So I can't. And like I said, they were trying to do the coup where they were going to beam him out. But since they didn't actually do it, they didn't actually break it.
True. And that's why I put this down as a no. But this is definitely, I think this is probably like skirting the Prime Directive, that they are just there. Just their presence, I would say, has to be some bit of an interference.
I mean, sort of. But I mean, like I said, the place, it doesn't seem like a part one break, because the part one break had already happened because there's been Federation contact before.
Sure.
The part two break is iffy because they were allowed to be there. They weren't told to leave. They weren't breaking any of the present rules. He just made his case for what he thought justice should be. Sure, she listened to him and she banished them. She didn't kill them. But I mean, I don't feel like that's like a huge break. I mean, I don't know. Maybe iffy, but I would lean no.
Yeah, no, I would say this is a no too. I mean, just the fact that it's really close that they're actually, you know, like I said, just they're in the mix. There is no violation.
Just interference by proxy.
You're skirting on something that could get really bad. So, you know, it's like I said, it's not a violation, but it could have been.
Yeah, but then again, it's such a micro issue. It's not like it's not like a, you know, a planet's going to blow up and they're making this huge life or death decision. This is like a, I mean, sure, there's life and death, but it's on a micro scale, not on a macro scale. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it almost doesn't even seem like it's that important of a of a break, if it is, and I don't think it is. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm with you. I totally agree that it's not a break, and no one on the crew breaks it specifically. If it was broken, it was broken before.
Yeah, sure. Well, the next one is definitely a break, and it's not on the Enterprise's fault, but this is too short a season. And this has to do with Admiral Mark Jameson gives this governor of Morin for Federation weapons, Karnas. And this is it's a funny episode.
It's trippy.
Yeah, because the Admiral keeps on taking these miracle drugs to keep on turning him to make him younger. And
it was a cool effect. I mean, it was well done.
Yeah, that guy had the whole Benjamin Buttons thing going on there.
He's like, hey, come on, wife, take these. Get young and sexy. Come on.
Let's have fun.
We don't have to worry about breaking our hips.
That's right. So, this admiral, it's not revealed right off the bat, but this admiral had given the governor Karnas these Federation weapons to help him with this war, but it turned into just a bloodbath on his planet, and it didn't turn out well for him. And this guy wanted revenge on the admiral because of basically what had transpired. So on his planet,
yeah.
So the Enterprise crew didn't really break anything. They just kind of witnessed everything that happened.
Yeah,
but. The admiral.
They did the best that they could with what they had, and they had a shitty admiral who was giving them all the orders who had already broken the Prime Directive before. So, yeah, right. It's definitely a break, but it wasn't broken by any of our heroes.
Right, exactly. So,
unless Karnas is your hero for some reason.
Well, Karnas could be your hero. He seemed kind of like a jerk, but I'm sure he had reasons.
Oh, sure.
So that was definitely a break on Starfleet's for their Admiral Jameson, but not from the crew. So we can say that is not in the Enterprise's fault. The next one is another very interesting one, is Symbiosis. And here we have David Marcus coming back.
Yes, David Marcus.
To Star Trek.
Raised from the dead. He puts Riker in this like sexy electric freeze thing.
Right. Symbiosis is interesting because you have two planets within their, I believe it's in the same solar system. The Delos system. And basically that they have this relationship between two separate races on two different planets. One is a planet that just manufactures these drugs. And then the other ones consume the drugs and basically give the other society that makes the drugs all their labor and any production to them so they can survive. And the drugs are said to cure them of a disease that is incurable, but this drug keeps them alive. And it is very painful. But what they find out as time progresses is that during the episode is that Beverly Crusher is like, they don't have the disease anymore. This is just pure drugs that are they're in
withdrawal.
They're in withdrawal when the drugs wear off, and Picard,
it's enslavement, basically.
Yes, exactly. So Picard is faced with this dilemma of does he interfere and give the drugs to David Marcus type of people who are drug addicts. Or do you
colors the way you look at David Marcus?
Yes, or do you give the do we let the people who are peddling the drugs go to hell? And by the way, the guy who is playing one of the drug dealer race is played by I gotta find out who he is, but it's the same actor as Khan's son in Wrath of Khan.
Okay,
so the drug dealer race is played by Judson Scott, who plays Sobe in Symbiosis, but he plays Joe Kahn in Wrath of Khan.
Nice. So,
and he also plays...
we have two Wrath of Khan guest actors in this one. How'd that work?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And he also reappears in Voyager in Message in a Bottle as Commander Rekar. So he's a Romulan in that one. So, but anyways... So, yeah, Picard is stuck with this dilemma of what to do with between these two planets, because it's obviously morally incorrect that what they're doing, they're enslaving these people. But what Picard basically does is, without violating the Prime Directive, he just basically says that he doesn't let the drug dealer deal go through. Or, no, he doesn't help them fix their engines.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, he doesn't really... And they're both spacefaring races because they basically ask the Enterprise to... you know, intercede in this matter. So Picard just kind of wiped his hands and just kind of let it fall where it fell.
Right. And thankfully for the druggy race is that they have, they go through the withdrawal and basically say it's going to be a rough couple months for them, but they'll get through it. So
drugs are bad. War on drugs episode.
Yeah, so it's sort of like they sort of interfere a little bit, but they just kind of break the chain by not helping them fix the things that they need to be fixed. So,
I could use some drugs for my knee.
You could, doctor. Good doctor, give him some drugs. Or I have to start going to the opium den. Oh,
that's bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you'd have some fun at an opium den. I bet there's a lot of fun things going on in opium dens.
Who knows? Like justice level fun?
It might not be that.
Might not be that fun.
Might not be that free and gay, but it might be just more dark and sad.
Yeah, probably dark and sad. I've seen Breaking Bad. It gets pretty sad.
The next episode we have is Deja Q. And this one I put a yes for. And I want to know what you're feeling on this. So here we have this moon that's going to destroy this planet. And during this mix of this moon, this planet's moon is just plunging towards their planet inexplicably. Q shows up and it has nothing to do with it per se. But the Federation is trying to stop this moon from crashing into the planet. And at the very end, when Q gets all his powers back because he was stripped of his powers, he basically puts the moon back in place. So it's not necessarily the Enterprise's fault for Q putting the moon back in its place, but they are trying to interfere with this race's planet. And although they seem like a spacefaring race and they seem like they're part of the Federation, don't you just let them die?
Not if they're part of the Federation. No, you save your own.
And is that the case? Because it seems like it's non-interference.
No. I think non-interference comes for – I'm pretty sure the non-interference directive only applies to non-Federation, non-allied people.
Okay.
That's my take on it, because, I mean, like, I know we're jumping ahead a little bit, but, I mean, like – technically, the Klingons are, allies of the Federation, and we have the episode where Kim Peck comes and forces Picard to make the decision, and Picard doesn't want to because it's feeling the break in the Prime Directive. But I mean, it's if the Klingon's making you do it, I mean, it's kind of not. I mean, he's asking you for a favor. He knew you were going to say no because of your rules, so he forced your hand anyway. So, I mean, they're kind of allies, but the Klingons were never formally part of the Federation, as far as I'm aware, because they were still always the Klingon Empire. Even in Deep Space Nine, they're always still referred to as the Klingon Empire. So they were just, like, fringe allies. But, I mean, if you're literally part of the Federation, I don't think you're subject to the non-interference, because, I mean, you're part of the Federation. It's why you join a big, you know, peacekeeping crew to help each other share resources and, you know, keep each other from dying, hopefully.
Yeah, that's true. And
you know, because Q was put in the situation, other Q could have been the ones driving the moon to the planet, and Q had to get his mojo back to fix it if he felt like doing it.
Right.
So I would say it's no, not a break of the Federation, not a break of the Prime Directive on any accounts. Because if it's a Federation planet, then I don't think it has anything to do with non-interference. And then Q putting it back, it's not like you can tell like a fifth, sixth dimensional being what to do.
No, true. But he was obviously there helping. And then by the time he left as kind of his peace offering or you know, whatever act of kindness he wanted to do.
Thank you for helping me get my powers back.
Yeah, he, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting thought or interesting exercise to think that, you know, what's happened there.
Sure, but I kind of think the cure behind it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually what happens is moons move further away from their planet, not closer in, unless there was something catastrophic that happened to the moon, like hit by an asteroid, like a giant asteroid that's sending it on a collision course. If it's just randomly falling toward that's probably outside interference from the cue.
It's a good point. Yeah. So, all right. So you're gonna say no. I'm gonna say maybe, but
so you're switching your yes to a maybe.
It just seems like, if you really look at it, I don't know. I guess you're right. I guess it does have to do with, are they part of the Federation? Are they spacefaring?
Yeah, because I mean, like, what's the point of being part of the Federation if you're like, oh, fuck you guys if your planet's going to blow up? I mean, with Pen Pals and Sharjanka, I mean, they weren't part of the Federation. They weren't spacefaring. As far as we know, their greatest piece of technology was the radio, not the orgy. So, they hadn't figured
the orgy.
They hadn't figured out the orgy yet, but they did know about radio.
Yeah, they did. So that would be creepy with the orgy side of it.
And they've got really weird long fingers. So, but it might feel good. Who knows?
Yeah, with that brought up, we are going to move on to pen pals, which is a huge violation of the Prime Directive.
It makes absolutely zero sense. Because it's Data.
So Data decides to make contact with this alien girl on this doomed planet. This planet's just destroying itself. And Data starts talking to this girl that's on this planet. And
so I've got like a new girlfriend, guys.
It doesn't even make sense. I mean, it's like Data of all people. I could see a lot of people like feeling bad. Like
maybe O'Brien feeling sorry for this little kid.
But how about Beverly Crusher? You know, like she would be perfect for this.
Yeah,
She's always trying to buck the Prime Directive just to save people.
Yeah.
We do have a great discussion, though, about the dilemma of the Prime Directive at one point during this episode with
they go meet in the quarters and just kind of like talk about it. It's like,
yeah, yeah.
It's an absolute.
Yeah. But it's a good idea that they're just kind of bouncing the idea around with the characters. So you kind of get a feeling of what the Prime Directive is, what it isn't. And then
how everyone feels about it.
Yeah, because everyone has a different thought of it, and everyone has a different interpretation. Like you said, Worf is very
by the letter, which is you know what I was kind of trying to do during TOS. It's very letter of the law versus spirit of the law type thing,
right?
And that's very Klingon, because Worf is always by the letter, never by the spirit.
But then we have Pulaski was in this one. Pulaski is season the doctor. Yeah, season two Pulaski, and she's kind of like, well, maybe we could just, you know, do this, do that, or whatever, you know, to skirt the issue. And there was this great debate between everybody. So very interesting. It does end up that they try to save Sarjanka, the young girl that Data's been talking to, and trying to stabilize the planet so the planet doesn't, you know, completely destroy itself.
Yeah, but like I feel like in one of the subsections of the rules, like wasn't there from our first episode of the Prime Directive, it felt like there was one of the sub things we went over is that like if a race is specifically asking for help, like you could kind of bend the Prime Directive.
I don't know. I mean, like, we've seen this more than once now.
Sure, but I mean, like in Into Darkness, the planet they weren't asking for it. They didn't know anything was wrong.
Right, right.
Sharjanka is further enough in technology where she can send out calls to space. She's not part of a Warp 1 civilization, but she, you know, she's like Mulder. She believes the truth is out there, and she's calling for help in the void.
But did she even know that she was calling out to space? Maybe she just thought that somebody would answer somewhere else on the planet. I don't know if she...
Yeah, if she's got a transmitter that's getting out to space... And they can have real time.
Anything. Radio can beam out in space.
Yeah, I know our radio can beam out in space, and it is being beamed out the space. And so is our TV. Star Trek's getting pretty far out there right now for 50 years. But I mean, it's just so far. Like for her to get, they've got to be close, or she's got to have a super powerful transmitter for it to work real-ish time with Data. You know, or maybe the Enterprise computers is just compensating for it. I don't know.
That's what I'm assuming, or that Data could even pick up those transmissions. The huge thing is that Data just just, and he knows it's a, he knows what the prime directive is, and then he just goes ahead and does this.
Talking to this person? Yeah, that's what makes no sense to me, because Data, the emotionless android, who more than Worf should be by the letter of the law, because he's 100% logical, or he should be,
right,
being a computer. The premise doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's definitely a break of the prime directive.
And, I mean, honestly, I mean, at what point can you just stop communicating with her and then fly away? I mean, like, Picard, once he hears her voice, then he's like, yeah, we gotta help her. So, like, right at the end of this meeting that they're having, and they're having this great debate, once he hears the girl's voice, he's like, well, now we have to help her.
Well, it's just, you know, instead of an idea that he could shoot down, it became real. You know what I mean? You know, it became...
Absolutely,
It became tangible. Versus, like, oh, Data's been talking to some little girl on a planet. Stranger danger. That's weird. that's weird. But then, like, you hear the voice, and it's not an idea anymore. It's real.
Exactly.
You take the Cavalier TOS approach, the prime directive.
Right. And he just throws it all out the window. It is an interesting thought process that they're wrestling with this, this rule that is very strict. And sometimes when you're out there, I can see it not really being applicable to certain things. And when he's saying, like, this young girl could just be, you know, destroyed in her whole family and culture just because, you know, we just don't want to help them.
I just wish we knew what those suborders were, because I feel like maybe a race asking for help specifically might warrant that.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's other episodes where I don't remember if it's on this list or not, but there's one where, you know, they try to do a first contact with this race. And they've developed a Warp 1 engine.
Yes,
and they meet and talk with the leader. And then the leader's like, "Yeah,
we'll get to it. But I know what you mean. So I'm putting pen pals in as for yes for the Enterprise crew. This lands mostly on Data's shoulders, but then Picard is a second. Gets a silver medal too for breaking.
But you know, they erase her mind, and so. It's just, like, it never happened, sort of.
I guess.
I'm not arguing that it's not a break. I'm just saying it's sort of, I mean, it's just, they kind of get around it very cleverly, I think. But it's definitely a break, but they do a really good job covering their tracks.
I guess. But it's still very, it's a slippery slope they're walking on. the next episode we have is the Masterpiece Society. This is a really cool episode, I thought. I'd forgotten about it. I hadn't seen this one in a long time. This is a genetically engineered society where everybody knows what their purpose is. It's very cool that this is actually just a cool idea. I mean, imagine, Dave, that you knew exactly from the day you were born what you were slated for and what you were going to be good at. You know, like, there's no guessing. You know, if you were going to be good at one thing or whatever that might be, this is the career that you'd be best for.
That would be great, as long as I liked it.
Yeah, I know. It's like, you're going to be shoveling shit in sewers. You're really good at it.
This is your call. Yeah, that sounds.
What if I don't want to do that?
I still don't know what I'm really good at.
I know. Everyone's always trying to guess what they're good at, but that's the thing. So that takes the question mark out of the air that you're trying to find in your life, but it also kind of puts you in that one hole.
This poor, poor man shoveling shit in the sewers.
That's all he has. the poop smith.
he makes the finest poop sculptures around because he has nothing better to do with his free time.
I know. Well, anyways, the Masterpiece Society is this race of humans that a colony that's walled itself off from anybody. And it seemed like the Enterprise and the Federation, Starfleet, didn't even know it existed. So it might have been pre-Federation when it went out there, or something when it was in its infancy. And it, like I said, everybody for generations knows exactly what they are, what they're going to do, and there's no discord or there's no fighting within this colony. Everybody seems to be very much at peace with what they have. Unfortunately, they have a giant asteroid that's flying towards this planet, and it's going to destroy it, destroy this colony. And while that's they're trying to help them, the society is so insular, they don't want Enterprise basically helping them. But the Enterprise realizes that what they can do is they can slightly move this asteroid off to the side, and even though the gravitational waves of this asteroid will shake the planet, they can try to, by using Enterprise and Federation technology, they can strengthen the colony structure so it doesn't collapse during while the asteroid goes by. So what we have is the crew members coming down to the planet and trying to basically shore up the walls and the architecture of this colony so it doesn't destroy. Because the outside, I guess, is inhospitable to the colonists. Meanwhile, there's a scientist that's one of the brilliant scientists who is an engineer. Her and Geordi get along really well, trying to figure out how to deflect this asteroid. And they come to this great relationship. And at the same time as well, Counselor Troi and the leader have this love affair between each other. So it's a very complex story, and it actually has a lot of great parts to it. I sincerely had forgotten about this episode quite some time ago.
I haven't rewatched it in a long time. It doesn't sound super familiar.
It's really good. It's actually, if you rewatch it, you'll be very surprised how interesting it is. Anyways, so what happens at the very end of this episode is that they save the colony, but the colonists, there's a small fraction of the colonists say, we want to defect. We do not want to stay on this colony anymore. We want to see what else is out there. And the leadership of the colony is like, if you leave, you're going to leave a huge hole in what, you know, this colony needs to survive, and it's going to create a lot of problems for us. And, you know, there's this whole dilemma of basically the Enterprise interfering with them to save them, but also, you know, it changes their whole society. So,
and the Enterprise did they take him away?
Yes, in the end they do. So it's not like they didn't. They knew that they would have some effect on the people, and the people are spacefaring enough. They understand. They don't get on spaceships because, like I said, they're insular, but they understand spacefaring and all that stuff. But they choose not to because they're very happy where they are.
Yeah.
But I would have to say that yes, they definitely seem to have somewhat broken the Prime Directive in a lot of ways, even if they have good intentions. And by changing the society just by them being there. You know.
I mean, that's one of the things we said in the first episode. It's like, you know, just we're a natural part of space, and just observing it changes.
Right.
Changes,
exactly.
Yeah. You know, it makes it different. So I mean,
just as that asteroid hurls towards that planet is a part of space, and it will destroy that planet or destroys that colony on that planet. You know, the Enterprise hurling towards it has ideas that can change that planet as well.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, you know, I feel like, you know, if they're an intelligent race, they're asking for help. I feel like there's a suborder that says, yeah, that's kind of cool. And then if people ask for asylum, I mean, once you've made your presence known, I mean, they're, you know, duty bound to respect requests for asylum, unless it's Q, and they're like, fuck you, Q, but,
The interesting thing at the very end was Riker tells Picard because they're human, the Prime Directive doesn't apply. But Picard feels responsible for the consequence, good or bad, and the colony has to basically rebuild itself.
Huh. So if they're human, the Prime Directive doesn't apply, then that would go back to Miri and mean if they are... Were the people on Miri human?
Apparently. I mean... It seemed like their biology was the same as humans. I mean, McCoy never said anything different.
So, I mean, you know, if that's in fact true, that if the human, the Prime Directive doesn't apply, then if that's another suborder. You know, they kind of just make things up loose and fast. But, you know, it's at one point it's kind of hard to buy that, oh, there's humans in all these different places, even before spacefaring people got out there. But at the same time, we know the Next Gen episode that one race seeded the humans, the Romulans, the Klingons, the Vulcans, you know, all of them. So, I mean, maybe they just seeded humans in different places and Vulcans in different places, too. So,
Right, because we
do run into the proto-Vulcans soon.
Right, exactly.
So,
I don't know. It's so maybe technically it's not a break, but maybe in spirit it's a break. I don't know.
I don't know. If Riker's right, if they're humans, it's not a break in the Prime Directive. I would say it's not a break in the Prime Directive.
Because whatever Riker says.
I mean, he's got the beard and the schlong, so, I mean, he's got to be right, right?
Does that make you right? Because if that's the case, I got to be right all the time.
Yes.
and I think I've been wrong a few times.
But, I mean, like, if he's speaking as a second officer on a starship, so I would assume he knows what the Prime Directive says since we aren't privy to it.
Right,
beyond the General Order 1, we don't know what the sub 20-something orders are. So, I, you know, just I have to take it on faith that he knows what those other rules are.
Right, right. Well, so we'll say that's a no, but
a no to mixed, you know.
Yeah, right, right. But it seems pretty. they definitely alter that society one way or the other.
Sure.
The next episode we have is Who Watches the Watchers? Here we have a great episode with Leland Palmer.
Yes. Your favorite person in all of Star Trek.
It's basically his only, right? It's his only role in Star Trek.
He's in Voyager.
That's right. He's in Voyager, too. I forgot.
Yeah, tries to kill Janeway, and I applaud him for trying.
Well, you know, we all have our reasons.
So this episode is without a doubt a break. That's super clear cut.
Yeah. Do you want to say it's completely a break or just that, you know, that it was just a accidental thing, obviously?
Sure. I mean, you know, it was accidental, but it's definitely a break because, I mean, they messed up.
And there's so many it's their
responsibility.
Problems.
Yeah, and they definitely compound their problem this episode, but it's a clear break. I mean, sure. I mean, this episode sets up the precedent that they will watch and observe pre-warp civilizations and try not to interfere. But when things, it's their responsibility to ensure nothing goes wrong. Something went wrong. Therefore, it's a break of the Prime Directive.
Right. So the
free and clear, total break, no questions asked.
So basically, an observation post on this planet full of proto-Vulcan humanoids at the Bronze Age level. This observation post starts having issues, and the holographic wall that hides them is revealed, and we have a native of the planet. Who comes walking with his daughter. This is Ray Wise from my favorite series, Twin Peaks. He ends up seeing it. He climbs up and he
gets
looks in. He looks in and he sees Data. And he gets thrown back and he falls and he basically looks like he's basically dead. Beverly Crusher, just out of her humanity, runs down and beams him up, has emergency beam up. And while he's up on the Enterprise getting his wounds tended to, he wakes up and sees Picard.
Picard. He's the god.
And he believes that Picard is God. So all of a sudden, this man is filled with his idea that there are supernatural beings that can just bring him back to life. And it starts with all this, when he gets beamed back, he comes back with fantastic stories of being on the Enterprise and seeing Picard. Now, they had thought that maybe he wouldn't remember anything that he saw. But unfortunately, he did.
Beverly messed up the M-gram erasing.
Right.
She did great with Sharjanka, but she can't crack Ray Wise.
Can't crack Ray Wise. He's got too much evil inside of him. From Twin Peaks. But anyways, he ends up kind of like going on this whole like like a prophet almost. Like, I saw the Picard, and, you know, he's got all the answers for us, and he brought me back to life, and his daughter can corroborate everything he said, that, you know, he was dead, and then he came back, and he was fine, so.
Yeah, and then Picard comes down, I'm not a god, shoot me with an arrow, and then Picard's got to get some help, too. And
Picard gets shot with the arrow, and it is so, what the strange thing is that first, one of the...
beam him back up, erase his memory, right, and just leave.
Well, one of the people from the observation posts have was stuck in a cave, and they found him, and they were like, "Oh, we got to take care of him because he's with the Picard and stuff like that." And Riker and Deanna go down incognito, trying to basically say, "Hey, look, man, this guy, we don't know what this Picard wants. He might not want anything. He might want us to leave him alone." And and they tried to distract him. Deanna tries to send him off on a wild goose chase. And then Riker runs off with this guy from the observation post. And instead of just beaming up like right away, he just goes on this crazy wild goose chase. And then Deanna ends up getting captured. And they're going to kill Deanna or torture her or something. We just don't know. And that's when Picard decides to beam down to save Deanna. Which, again, if the Prime Directive is so important to Picard, he should have let Deanna die.
Or he shouldn't have sent them in the first place.
Or that as well.
Just beam him back up, erase his memory, and put him back.
Right.
Do it right, Beverly, please. Or get Nurse Osaka or whatever to come in and do it for you. If you can't do it right.
Just send her down. It's fine.
Or Dr. Salar. She can do it right. Get someone to do it right, please.
Somebody, please do it right. So this is a really interesting episode. In the very end,
another domino effect of Prime Directive going awry.
Right. So at the very end, Picard ends up coming down, like you said. Ray Wise shoots him with an arrow, and then they realize that he's human, like he's been saying. Oh, in the meantime, Picard beamed up one of their other leaders to show them that we're just human. We're just a little more advanced than you. And she's like, "Oh, I see. It's a great episode. Sense. It's a great episode, actually.
It is a really, really great episode, but it's probably one of the clearest, easiest breaks the Prime Directive this episode yet.
Yeah, this one.
Without a doubt, no debate.
Yeah, I mean, besides this one, Justice, and there's one other one we haven't got to yet, there's huge, giant breaks of Prime Directive. So, and in the end, Picard kind of explains to him, he's having like a little Sermon on the Mount. Talk with the people.
Break the bread, and the fishes.
Saying, "Yeah, look, you know, we're just like you, just a little more advanced, and someday you can do what we do. See you later, kids." And
hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah, just like, this is terrible, Picard. you should lose your captainship for this. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, there's no excuse for like most of this.
I know. It's just because Picard gave a little inch, it just started falling apart faster and faster. So this was a terrible judgment on Picard's part. He should have at least, I don't know, been a little stricter.
Yeah, something. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just, they should have just beamed up the observation post once it stopped working and do whatever to it, you know, like just leaving it there. It's just, I don't know. It's just bad, bad juju. Makes for a great story. It was a very fun episode, but Prime Directive is broken in this amazing, the terrible domino effect and it, for no good reason.
Absolutely. Next episode we have is what you were talking about before, is First Contact. This is a great episode as well. The civilization is on the cusp of warp travel, and the Enterprise and other parts of the Federation have been just observing this culture on reconnaissance missions to see where they're at. And what they want to do is when they make the first warp travel, they will make contact with this race. But unfortunately, Commander Riker seems to be stuck in some kind of riot of some sort, and he's injured. And when he gets there into the hospital, he's knocked out. They find out that he's not part of their race. And they first they think that maybe he's just like, you know, like a mutated version of them, like he's disfigured somehow, a birth defect kind of thing. But they realize pretty quickly that this guy is not.
But, you know, the nurse chick, she thinks she's hot. So, you know, it's all good.
Yeah. What's her name from Cheers? Yeah. forgot her name. Lily from Cheers. Is it? Yeah, Lily from Cheers. Yeah, she wants to sleep with an alien.
That would be so hot. I wonder if he has two penises.
That is so hilarious. And I just like Riker's like, well, you don't have time for this. And she's like, I won't let you go without it. And he's like, well.
Next time I'm in your solar system, I'll call you.
Yeah, this is a great episode.
This is a really good episode. And I would come down on saying it's not a violation of the Prime Directive. I mean, sure, the accident happened with Riker, but it was kept pretty quiet. Most people don't believe it. And it's what they do when a race is on the cusp of first contact. It's their first contact procedure. It's specifically meeting a new race when they're going to come out into space. And they basically asked the leader or the scientist, it's like, hey, what do you think? Should we reveal ourselves to your people? And they're like, you know, I'd love it if you did, but our people can't handle it. And they respected it. So
yeah, that's a good point, and that's they did respect it. And the one thing about this episode that a side note that kind of reminded me of is like you hear about all these alien UFO stories of how aliens contacted like Eisenhower and stuff like that. When he was president, and you know how they made deals with the humans.
Oh yeah,
you know. And so I mean,
we will abduct 5 of their people a year. Yeah, we will shove that, things that up their ass for 4 of them.
Yeah, yeah.
The 5th one gets wild sex.
Yeah. So, but this is very much like that. You know, this is like that, but you know, Federation style. So,
yeah.
So interesting how they. This planet is not quite ready to go to warp yet. Their culture they seem very nervous.
Xenophobic.
Yeah, xenophobic almost. Is the perfect word for it. Yeah, they're scared of what's outside. There's a very strong conservative groups that don't think they should do any of this stuff, and they're very scared of what might happen.
Yeah.
It's
a great episode. I don't think it's a break because they're following first contact procedure, and they, and like I said, they gave them the choice, and they said no, and like fine.
But technically, here's the thing. But technically, Dave, the thing is that they never quite made the warp trials, so they technically are not warp ready, and so it does not make them a candidate for first contact yet. Yeah. So. Although they're really close.
Maybe Vulcans are just more strict on it. Vulcans want to see the warp trail. Want to see the warp signature. Humans are like, yeah, they're close enough. It's good. I mean, if they've got the technology, I mean, I feel like that's like, yeah, might as well. Let's do it. Come on. It's not that. Vulcans aren't breathing down our neck that we have to, you know, smell their warp trail.
Right.
I mean, like, if on the cusp, I don't know. I feel like it's fine.
Right. It's definitely... It's close. I'm not saying it is a clean break, but I think there's some like shades there, you know.
Sure.
So yeah, so that's where I come down.
Some premature stuff happening, but you know, it's I don't know. I feel like it's they're on the up and up. They were nice to the people.
They were nice. They were nice. The food was good. Anyway, so the next episode we have on this list is The Price.
This makes no sense to me at all.
That this is a negotiation for possession of a stable wormhole. It doesn't really make a lot of sense why this has been cited for a Prime Directive. I can't see anything.
Yeah, I can't see anything either. Basically, they're trying to get this wormhole, and they're trying to basically buy this area of space. The only reason it can kind of maybe possibly be a Prime Directive break is because the Ferengis get stranded there. That was nobody's fault but the Ferengi, so I can't blame this on anybody but the Ferengi. And the Ferengi are not part of the Federation until like the very last episode of Deep Space Nine, so...
Right.
Can't... they're not bound by the Prime Directive.
Right, exactly.
Which is why Janeway should have left them alone!
Right, and that's exactly...
And false prophets.
So, yeah, so when we see these two Ferengi again, they are in the Delta Quadrant with Janeway.
And just having the best time of their life until Janeway comes and fucks it up. Thanks, Janeway. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I don't know if this is definitely anything to do with the Federation or the Enterprise itself. So, I mean,
I feel like the only reason it's considered a break is because we know what the Ferengi do, but they're not part of the Federation, so they're not bound by it.
Right. Exactly. It's a good point. So you can't be really concerned of what outside players like the Ferengi or the Klingon or any other race does outside of the Federation. To break the Prime Directive.
Yep.
So, yeah, I would say this is a no as well. Next episode we talked about with Pete Hurst some time ago was Reunion. This is where Spock, Ambassador Spock, comes into play, and he tries to make peace with the Romulans. It has notes of, you know, breaking the Prime Directive because you are kind of trying to change the society from within.
Is Spock still technically part of the Federation at this point? As far as we know, he's gone rogue. He doesn't hold a rank.
Yeah, this is why they consider cowboy diplomacy with Spock. But he is technically still part of the Federation, or a Federation, a member of the Federation.
Well, I mean, he's a Vulcan, so he's a citizen of the Federation.
Right, and he holds status. I mean, he's an ambassador. You're kind of part of the government.
Sure, but I mean, I don't think he technically held that title because, I mean, he couldn't be technically ambassador to Romulus because the point of him being there was that the bigwigs on Romulus didn't know he was there.
Well, some people did know, but...
Well, no, just the people in the underground, but that's not the main leadership, you know what I mean?
Like, right, true.
Because if the main leadership knew Spock was there, they would kill him just because, you know, he's Spock.
Or imprison him, right.
One or the other.
Yeah, true. And I agree with that. But Spock going in there with everything he knows about the Prime Directive and trying to broker a reunification between the Vulcans and the Romulans is, you know, is hard to swallow, you know, just by himself. I'm not saying that's a clear break of the Prime Directive, but it's definitely trying to change that culture.
Well, sure, he's trying to get the culture to open up, but I mean, since it's not being, I can't say it's a break from anybody other than Spock, and I still don't know if Spock was actually working in a capacity as an ambassador at this point in his life. I mean, sure, I mean, people probably called him Ambassador Spock, but he wasn't working in that capacity officially because he couldn't have been being on Romulus because that's like a no-fly zone for people who are part of the Federation. So I would just say at this point, Spock is more or less a retired ambassador.
Well, or a retired Federation member, one or the other.
Yeah, retired Federation member. He's a private citizen who's just trying to do some good. So, I mean, I feel like he's not really bound by the Prime Directive because he's just acting as a private citizen, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right,
but
right.
He's using his years of being an ambassador, you know, of course, for his benefit, but I don't think he's acting in full ambassador capacity.
Right, exactly.
Because he couldn't be being on Romulus. It wouldn't make any sense.
Right, right. Well, yeah, so I would say this is mixed, but kind of sliding towards no. I mean, the Romulans and the Federation have been basically had their horns locked forever, and it's not like the Federation's choices aren't affecting it on a daily basis anyways, even if it's from without, where the Starfleet ships are set, you know, on the Romulan border. I mean, that affects them, you know, all sorts of things affects Romulans just by what the Federation's decisions are. So I don't know if that's necessarily changing their culture just because, you know, Spock is on the planet and trying to covertly change things and change attitudes.
Yeah, he just wants them to be less xenophobic. I mean, that's not a bad thing. I mean, sure, it might be changing their culture, but he ultimately fails pretty much, so...
Yeah, shrugs. He does. He does, but, I mean, he keeps trying, to his credit.
And then Romulus blows up, so, I mean, there's no reason to care anymore.
Right. Whatever.
Who knows?
The next episode we have here is Half-Life. We did talk about the actor here who played Dr. Timenshin.
Timenshin, yeah.
Is Simakin, yeah. Davin Agenstairs, who recently died.
Yeah.
This is a great episode as
Fantastic
well.
Fantastic episode.
This is where his culture, unfortunately, says on his planet, when you reach the age of, ripe old age of 60, that's when you cash in your chips and you commit ritualistic suicide.
Ritualistic, so the planet doesn't go stagnant.
Yeah.
Don't want nursing homes. Ever on this planet. We abolished those years ago. You must kill yourself.
Yeah.
So you're not a strain on the young.
What a terrible
place.
I'm getting close to that age, Dave. So a couple more years, I'll be getting closer and closer.
I won't put you in a nursing home, Aaron.
Thank you. So we have Loxana Troi. She develops a relationship with him, and she basically goes to Picard when she finds out about this ritual on his planet. It's it's not right.
And Picard's like, I can't do anything.
It's for my prime directive. I can't do anything about their society. That's how they decided to set things up. And she's like, well, it's your prime directive, not mine. And she storms off.
She goes and cries to Timokin. Timokin basically convincing him to ask Picard for sanctuary.
Right.
And Picard can't deny him. I mean, it's like, sure, if you want that, you can have it.
Yeah, but Timokin, in the end, decides to go through with it. And Loxana Troi, at the very end, decides to go along with him to watch him die. So
that woman has such a rough life.
Yeah, she has. But nobody's broken the prime directive in this episode.
No, not at all. I mean, she asked Picard to. Picard says no. The guy asks for sanctuary. He says yes. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
He's obligated to give it if it's requested.
Right. So it's I don't know if you consider that technically breaking the prime directive if he did do that, but I don't feel he would.
I don't feel like either. I think maybe some of these episodes are just mentioned because the prime directive is mentioned in the episode, not that it's actually broken.
Right.
But we're investigating no matter the cost.
Yes, exactly. So that's a no. And the next episode we get is Homeward. Homeward is a huge shit show.
Yes, it's a break of the prime directive
for so many reasons, and
so the snowball episodes.
Yeah, it just gets worse and worse. So unfortunately, Worf has a stepbrother or foster brother who is older than him, Nikolai
Rozhenko.
Yeah, and
the least charming of his family.
Yes, but Nikolai decides that he's on this observation on this planet called Brala. Their atmosphere is just suddenly just getting sucked off the planet by space balls. And
it's gone from suck to blow.
But they don't know why it's happening. But it's happening so fast they can't really stop it. The race is, I mean, they seem like they're, like I said, like Bronze Age kind of civilization. And Nikolai has this huge bond with them, and they can't seem to find him. But later on, they find that he's in the cave system. He's set up a deflector shield to keep the atmosphere safe in this cave system. But he's brought people down there. He's brought Borallans down with him. Of course, Worf goes down to see him, and he says, we have to go talk to the captain. And so they beam up. And during this time, Captain Picard says, absolutely not. We cannot help these people. The planet's going to be destroyed of its atmosphere, and the race will die. Unfortunately, that's just how it is. The prime directive is going to get in the way from saving these people. And we have this great scene where we see the atmosphere getting just sucked off the planet, and everyone's kind of sad.
Suck.
And we have during that time, Nikolai has beamed up the Borallans that were in this cave and put them into the holodeck. How this gets by Worf, how this gets by any security protocols, I have no clue.
He faked a power outage.
He did.
To make the giant power surge he was doing by drawing. It makes no sense. You're faking a power outage by just using the transporters and sucking up all the power. I mean, I guess it sort of makes sense. I don't know.
It makes sense. I mean, if you give Nikolai the idea that he's a pretty brilliant guy, I mean, he did go to Starfleet Academy. Doesn't mean he's good at running, you know, the Enterprise and knowing its systems. But
he figured it out real good.
Yes, he figured that out pretty good. Maybe he had a couple of drinks with Worf trying to get him to tell him.
What's the security systems for this, this, and this?
Oh, what's the security code? It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
A glass of prune juice. That's all needs Worf to tell you anything.
He may have been drinking blood wine. You don't know.
Maybe a prune juice blood wine mixture.
So unfortunately, of course, the holodeck is having issues with this, where the refugees of this planet is on. Picard's put in the middle. He's like, well, I can't just beam them down to the planet and let them die.
Oh, it'd be funny if he did.
It would be funny if
just
he did.
Just do what the Mirror Universe does and just beam just out of space.
Beam out of space. Fuck up.
Oh, it'd be great.
So they decide they're going to transplant them onto another planet. They go to this next – they find a planet that would be suitable for them to live. It'd be different. A little, I guess it's a little harsher, but it's away from any disputed areas, so they won't be affected by anything outside, by the external politics of the planet. So they find this homeworld planet. While they're flying towards it, unfortunately, the holodecks are just blinking in and out and having all sorts of problems.
My reality's so confused.
And unfortunately, one of the...
There's shit sliding over the floor because it's not staying in the containers.
What the fuck is going on here? So,
man, it's so gross in there.
That's hilarious. Vorlin, a young guy, part of Borellan, walks out of the holodeck and is exposed to everything on the Enterprise, goes 10 forward, and just is freaked out. So he has to come with a decision of what he wants to do. Picard even offers him a space on the Enterprise or within the Federation if he doesn't want to go back. So you can stay out here with us if you want. And but if you go back, you know, they're never going to believe you. They're probably going to think you're crazy. So
blackmail.
So Vorlin doesn't know what to do with it, and he basically commits suicide in the end.
That's fun.
Sadly enough, another ritualistic suicide. But they do get the people to their second home. They beam them down without them knowing. And they...
Hey, my shit stopped sliding around the floor.
That's what, strange.
What happened?
I stopped seeing that grid pattern everywhere. So after that happens, Nikolai decides that he's going to stay with the Borellans.
I will be your leader.
I will be your leader. It's like, do you really want to stay with these people?
Oh, man. This is like such a break of the prime number. I mean, like, they shouldn't have let him be their leader. That's awful. It's awful.
I know. Everything about this is a huge break in the prime directive. So, you know, it's difficult, to say the least, to say that this is a good episode. It's an interesting episode for the dynamics of Worf and his brother. Other than that, it's just kind of like a lot of shitty decisions by everybody.
Yeah, it's just domino bad.
It even when Worf says, maybe you should send somebody else in with them other than me, because I think he knew that he was emotionally compromised with his brother.
Yeah.
So
yeah, just lots of bad in this episode. I'm not even going to defend this at all. There's nothing. Prime Directive was saved. It was not saved at all in this episode.
No, absolutely not. I would have to say Picard is almost as guilty as Nikolai.
But at the same time, it's just like, is it good to just murder those people, just beam them into space? I mean, they were going to die anyway, but still, it's just like, I don't know. I don't think Picard's that cold-hearted.
Well,
it's
obviously like, not. Okay. If he beams up the little girl, Sir Janka.
Yeah, sure, Janka.
Right.
He's got a soft spot for ladies.
So that's basically it. The only other episode is the very first episode, Encounter at Farpoint. I don't really think that this has anything to do with the Prime Directive other than that giant alien jellyfish, you know. was imprisoned. We don't really know what their relationship is with that race, but I would say that's a big no. It's cited, but I kind of skipped it because it's really not. So,
I wouldn't.
So there we have it. That is Next Generation. Dave, how do you think the Enterprise D crew held up during their series?
I mean, considering they had four more seasons than TOS, I mean, it's neck and neck, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting pretty close. I haven't done the tally yet, but we're going to have to do a tally at the very end. Who upheld it the most and who broke it the most?
Deep Space Nine.
Well,
Deep Space Nine and Voyager.
Yeah,
Deep Space Nine is going to be the least infractions. Voyager is going to be the most infractions.
Yeah, mostly just because Deep Space Nine, for the most part, stays on the station or around the station. So they don't go too often, too far off, unless they get stuck.
They play it safe.
Yeah, we play it safe around here. So,
and they're also, it's a Bajoran space. I mean, it's a Cardassian, but it's in Bajoran space. They also have to fly by Bajoran rules a lot of times. So
sure, right,
that kind of makes them semi-exempt from Prime Directive things because they're having to run things by another culture's rules because they're not part of the Federation. That's the whole reason why they're there at Deep Space Nine, is to bring the Bajoran people into the Federation.
Right. But this one, I think Picard and crew tries really hard to keep it into, like, they try to keep the Prime Directive, but there are just times they fly far off the rails.
Oh, yeah.
So I would say Justice is one of them. Who Watches the Watchers and Homeward are probably the three big examples of where they just – oh, and Pen Pals, too.
Pen Pals.
They make huge, terrible decisions. So four.
Yeah, like four that are total bad breaks.
Yeah, yeah. Everything else is, it's got some questionable things, but they're not terrible.
Yep.
Anything else you want to say about Prime Directive Part 3?
Part 3. Oh, man. So we're going to do the next-gen movies next time?
Next-gen movies, and then we'll get into Deep Space Nine, and maybe if we have time, we'll talk on some Voyager episodes as well.
That way we don't have to do a two-part on Voyager.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. I mean, there's a lot on Voyager.
We might just have to do a Voyager speed round or something just to, like...
Yeah, we'll have to get a bell and ding it.
Yeah. Bing!
Yeah, exactly.
Although next time we might have a surprise for an episode. If it's Prime Directive, that's not the surprise. If it's a Prime Directive Part 4, that's not the surprise. If it's not Prime Directive Part 4 next time, then that will be the surprise. So I'm still waiting to hear back if that's going to be a thing or not. But it'll be a thing sooner or later.
Sure. All right. Well, enough of teasing these people. We'll get into Prime Directive Part 4.
Soon. So, what do you guys think about the Prime Directive? Let us know if you think we're wrong on these, or if you think we're right, or if there's other episodes that we may have missed. We are
love to hear about it.
Yeah, we are mostly focusing on what Memory Alpha is citing as Prime Directive violations. So,
cited about the Prime Directive. Something happened with the Prime Directive.
Or if we can remember them off the top of our heads and they didn't seem like they were mentioned on Memory Alpha, we'll bring those in as well. But if you guys have recently seen something that wasn't on this list, let us know. We'd love to read your emails about it and hear your thoughts on how you think the Prime Directive is going. Our interest for by Dave Wilkes. The rest of our music provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show you can find at synthaholics.com. You can email us all your wonderful emails and thoughts about the Prime Directive at synthaholics@yahoo.com. And check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/synthaholics, for the podcast, other videos, and drinking videos for cocktail tutorials. So those are a whole lot of fun.
Many drinking videos. And hey, if you can go onto Apple iTunes, rate and review us there, we appreciate it. Leave us 5 stars preferably and something nice. It helps us get seen by it for more people. Also, if you could, if you have the chance, support us. Go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics. Throw some money our way just to help keep the lights on here in our podcasting studios. Well, on to the next exciting episode of Prime Directive.
Prime Directive
Part 3.
And if you're getting tired of Prime, if you're getting tired of Prime Directive, blame it on Andrew Dumais. He's the one who requested us do Prime Directive.
And we'll be posting his mailing address, so you can
mailing address and emailing address. Yeah, soon. I'll be messaging him and asking them, and I'll see no reason.
Why are people showing up at my house?
You asked for this?
You asshole.
Oh, man. Oh, we love you, Andrew. It's great. Well, thank you all so much for listening. It's been a great time. Live long and prosper, one and all. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Indeed. Let us do it.
Do it, right?
They just do it. I ordered a new modem.
Ordered a new modem?
Yeah, because I already had a custom modem, but I ordered another one that was a bit bigger, handles faster speed, and I talked in a vaguely Mexican accent the entire time.
When you were ordering it?
No, when I was calling Time Warner to switch the MAC address so I could use the new modem.
Oh, my God.
Like, hello.
Hello.
Hello. This is,
They're like, Dave Duncan?
I was speaking in some vague Mexican-ish accent.
I hope the person wasn't Mexican on the other end. It could hear right through your accent.
I don't know.
It's like me trying to speak it with an Irish accent. It's so obvious I have no idea what I'm doing.
The luck of the Irish.
Hey, hi-yo-ho.
Hi-yo-ho, hi-yo-ho.
Hey, kiss me, I'm Irish. Hi. Kiss my arse.
I'm green and my beard is red.
My beer is red and my pubes are green.
If you know what I mean. Uh-huh.
Kiss me, I'm Irish. Oh, don't pinch me there.
You don't have to pinch me. My pubes is green.
Ah, yes. Don't pinch my testicles.
Oh.
Should we get started?
Yes, sir.